Dear ladies and gentlemen, my name is Alexey Khabyuk. I work as research associate at the Institute for Broadcasting Economics. And before I start my presentation, I would like to thank to our hosting university, the Kiev Mohyla Academy, and its related organization, the Kiev Mohyla School of Journalism, for the chance to speak here at the premises of this old and famous elite university. To stress the up-to-dateness of our topic, I would like to present you first a quotation of a very famous person and a former journalist who unfortunately turned to the dark side. Guess who? It's Hannah Herrmann, who said, "Public service broadcasting." Louder? Okay. "Public service broadcasting will be introduced when people will come into power for whom democracy is not make up but beliefs." I should add that at the moment of this quotation, her party was in the opposition. But since she is deputy director of the president's administration, the chances for introducing the public service broadcasting are possibly rising. But all joking aside, the question of introducing a public service broadcasting is closely linked with the question, what is a public service broadcasting? And there are many different definitions and concepts of the PSB. Some say the PSB, the abbreviation of PSB, stands for President's Sons and Brothers. On the other side, we have heard from the previous speakers which elements will be regarded as core elements of the public service broadcasting in Germany. Besides the question whether a concrete broadcaster is a public one or not, importance gains the mechanisms of protection of the broadcasters from undue state influences. This will be the topic of my presentation. Also, I will speak mainly about public service broadcasting. The statements can be applied to a certain extent to state and even commercial broadcasting. My presentation will be in three parts. In part one, I will theoretically explore the kinds of state interventions the PSB can be faced with. And in part two, I will describe the situation in Germany. My conclusions in part three will be rather short. So let's come to part one. The term "flooding gates" is a good metaphor to characterize the nature of state interventions in the public service broadcasting. It describes a mechanism whose purpose is to control the water flow. Water, or mutatis mutandis, state interventions are for this mechanism something normal. But if it doesn't function properly, in other words, if it allows too many interventions, then this will produce an overflow. I have collected some sources which try to describe such flooding gates. I will not describe them in detail because the terms are rather overlapping, and I will present you on the next slide an own classification. But all in all, I would like to hold as a conclusion that the state interventions are rather difficult to describe. There is one source, the independent study on indicators for media pluralism, which follows an interesting approach. It tries to describe the risk of possibility of state interventions with regard to media pluralism. However, this approach only analyzes the legal situation. We tried at our institute to connect both legal and factual points. And I would like to propose, as I already said, an own criteria set based on different sources, but mainly on the results of work done at our institute, published namely by Dr. Kops. And I will describe this criteria on the next slides. The first criterion, which I have from a paper published by the IPRA. IPRA is a European platform for of regulating authorities, where the National Council for Television and Radio of Ukraine is also a member. The first criterion is the autonomy of public service broadcasting or degree of regulation. IPRA says a regulation by act and a contract is the strongest form of the regulation. The regulation by act and order is a less intensive one. The same intensity will be assumed for the regulation without act, because the state has discretionary possibilities for interventions. The regulation by act only is a form of regulation which allows the biggest autonomy for the public service broadcasting. The second group of criteria is ownership, governance, and external supervision. And I have put them together because they depend on each other. The ownership can be public, like in Germany, private, like with TV2 in Denmark, and state, like in Ukraine. It is trivial to say that the state ownership implies the strongest dependence from the state. The public one is a less intensive dependence. The governance structure, which depends partly on the form of ownership, is of a major importance for the independence of the broadcaster. It depends on the amount of state representatives in the supervision and governing bodies and their power of decision. Also, external control plays a major role. It makes difference if there is a special regulating authority. A ministry which deals also with other general issues is expected to intervene stronger, also because of its broader competences. Now we come to number three, the legal definition and factual implementation of program remit. And there we can distinguish between a narrow program remit and a broad one. A broad program remit does not automatically mean that there exists a freedom in remits implementing. It happens only if there is a self-regulation implemented, if there is a self-regulation is established. It can also be a trap for state interventions. A narrow program remit, on the other side, means that concrete goals are documented in a contract, for example. This can mean that a broadcaster has to reach a certain audience within its news, like it's, for example, in the Flemish part of Belgium. Another point which is also important is the control of remits implementation. Does a pre-control of programs exist? Or other pre-control can be also censorship. Then we come to the important, very important question of founding. What is the legal definition of founding and how it is implemented? And within this group of questions, we should know, does a founding exist which is sufficient and predictable in the midterm so that the broadcaster can know I will receive this amount of money in 5 years or in 3 years, so I can make investments today, make investments in the better program. Another point is, important point is, who is paying? If citizens are paying directly, then it is, of course, the broadcaster is less dependent on the state, on the state interventions. If the state pays directly or the citizens then indirectly, then it's, of course, not so good for the independence of a broadcaster. And a question which is also important is, are the revenues fixing and granting procedures? Who does it? Independently from the question, who is paying? We will see later at the German system that the revenues will be fixed by a commission, by an independent commission, and this is also part of the, this is also a possible flooding gate for a state intervention. Number five, collection of revenues. Who does this funding the revenues collect? Is it a strong a state organization, or will be the collection conducted by an independent organization, which is under or which is possibly as a PSB control? Number six, appointments and personal policy. What are the appointment procedures for the top management? Who does it and under which conditions? What are the appointment policies for the journalists? Which rights do the journalists have within the organization? These are all important questions for state interventions, for independence from the state interventions. And finally, we come to number 7, content outlets. What is the procedure of granting of the broadcasting license? And whom do technical facilities belong to? And let's look at the situation in Germany, how these 7 groups of criteria are constituted there. As we have already heard, public service broadcasting is regulated by state treaties or laws. And additionally, almost every federal state has its own laws and broadcaster statutes. Every broadcaster has their own statute. For example, the VDR, the WDR, the public service broadcaster in the federal state North Rhine-Westphalia, a federal state we are coming from, there is a law on the VDR, and the VDR has its own statute. Another important point is that are the rulings of the Federal Constitutional Court. There are certain cases, certain verdicts, which strongly influence the legislation in favor of the independence of public service broadcasting. And after the introduction of the commercial broadcasting in 1984, public service broadcasting's role was to guarantee an indispensable fundamental provision for it for all. The second broadcasting ruling demanded for guarantee of existence and development for public service broadcasting. Thus, the public service broadcasting cannot be abolished anymore. And the commercial broadcasting is only allowed as long as public service broadcasting is able to provide a fundamental provision. Now, come to ownership, governance, external supervision. And I think it was Professor Schiwi who mentioned today the attempt of the federal government to establish a second TV channel in form of a commercial company. And this provoked a ruling of the Federal Constitutional Court. And this ruling determined that the autonomous corporation under public law has to remain the only acceptable organization form of public service broadcasting. And then only federal states had the exclusive legislation power. Now I will shortly describe the governance structure of the WDR. I have to say that this is similar to other broadcasters, but there are, of course, some subtle distinctions. But because Professor Kleinsteber will describe in the next presentation the broadcasting, the nature of the broadcasting councils more detailed, I will do it rather shortly. So there is governance structure is governance structure of the WDR consists of a broadcasting council, an administrative council, and a director general. And the broadcasting council has the competences to its main competences is to elect or dismiss a director general and the other directors of the top management, and declare in written form violations of program principles. It also elects 7 members of the administrative council, which in turn monitors the director general in all management activities except programming decisions. And director general has in a public service broadcaster in Germany a very strong position. It counts broadcaster, on in this case the WDR, independently. He is solely responsible for programming organization and operations of it, and ensure that all programs comply with legal requirements. has also the sole right to propose candidates for election as directors through the Broadcasting Council. And this is a very strong and powerful instrument to avoid intervention. It's also interesting to know that a decision-making in the board of directors does not underlie the principle of collective responsibility, but it is subordinated to the director general. The director general is also relatively free to make programming decisions, but he is more dependent with regard to economic and technical decisions. And the power of balance in the public service broadcasting in the WDR is clearly distributed in favor of the director general, and such governance structure is called director general's corporate governance. There is also an external control in the public service broadcasting. The federal government exercises a narrow legal supervision over the WDR, and which, however, excludes programming issues. And as I have already said, there are strong similarities in the organizational structure and allocation of tasks of the supervisory bodies of the public service broadcasting, but there are a few subtle distinctions. And for example, this one distinction is lies in the number of broadcasting council members. You have only 17 council members in the Deutsche Welle, but 77 in the television council of the CDF. Another distinction is the proportion of the state representatives in the councils. The highest one is in Deutschland Radio, 50%. The highest one are in Deutschland Radio, 50%, Deutsche Welle, 47%, and CDF, 44%. Now I would like to come to the point three, the legal definition and factual implementation of the program remit, or in other words, content regulation. And there is a rather broad definition in paragraph 11 of the Interstate Treaty on Broadcasting and Telemedia. And the law on the WDR contains only some further broad provisions, but the WDR issues on the proposal of the Director General Program Directives, which contain details about implementation of the remit, but they are still rather broad. And the WDR publishes every 2 years a report about the fulfillment of its remits, the quality and quantity of the existing offerings, and the main points of the planned offerings. Number four, legal definition and factual implementation of founding. Paragraph 12 of the Interstate Broadcasting Treaty says founding must enable public service broadcasting to meet its constitutional and statutory mandate. In particular, it shall guarantee the existence and development of public service broadcasting. We have already heard that public service broadcasting will be predominantly financed by a license fee, which is 17.98 euro per month, which every household has to pay. And revenues from advertising and other financial revenues are also allowed, but they are less important because they amount to about only 40% of the whole revenues. I think 8% of the revenues come from sponsoring and 6% from the advertising. There is also a commission of independent experts which determine the amount of the license fee. It was founded in 1975 as an assisting institution purely to make recommendations to the federal state premiers about the amount of the license fee. Every federal state delegates one member, and these members are experts from the audit and consulting sector, from media economics, from the federal state audit courts, and so on. And these members are well known, so they are possibly not willing to put their reputation at stake if a federal state says you have to make this and this decision. Then they can say, no, I won't do this. And they may not be also a member of parliaments. This commission analyzes every 2 years the needs of the public service broadcasters, and it publishes every 2 years a report. But even it is, if it assesses the needs, critically assesses the needs of the public service broadcasters, it has to preserve programming authority of the broadcasters. And since the 18th ruling of the Federal Constitutional Court, it gained more power and independence to guarantee the state distinct determination procedure of the license fee. In 2005, federal state governments, for the first time in the history, deviated from the KFIR recommendations and approved an increase of 88 cents instead of 1.09 euro. And then the broadcasters went to the court, and in 2009 there was the 12th ruling, which said the deviation of the federal state governments was not correct. Number five, collection of revenues. Before 1976, the revenues were collected by the federal post. It was a state enterprise. But since then, it will be done by the GSZ. A GSZ is a joint organization of public service broadcasters, and is completely under the control of them, under of their control. And the GSZ, in the GSZ are 96% of all households which possess a broadcasting device in Germany are registered. So 96% has to pay. But this number is decreasing because of demographic trends and increasing amount of unlicensed viewers. Interesting is to know that the collection procedure is more efficient than those of the taxing authority, so it costs less money to collect the license fee. Number six, appointments and management of personnel. The main appointments will be done by a director general. And journalists are considered to be independent and have strong rights. However, it is often so that top personnel appointments will be taken according to the logic of proportional representation. So if a director general belongs or sympathizes with a certain party, his deputy should be someone supported by the rival party. However, it is false to conclude that journalists who are party members are not independent enough to criticize their own party. And number seven, the content outlets. The transmitters belong to the public service broadcasting, and public service broadcasting has a priority within the procedure of license, transmitting, license granting. And the third point, which I have forgotten to mention, is there are must-carry rules. So if there is a network, of cable network existing, then it has to broadcast this, the main programs of the public service broadcasters, which are available in this region. Let's come to the conclusions. So my points are there are certain mechanisms to hold off state interventions, and it is much more difficult to establish a state intervent. to establish a state intervent public service broadcaster than an independent one, because already one bias factor, for example, the ownership or funding, can negatively influence the whole system. And the most important power behind the increasing of independence of public service broadcasting are the staff, the management, the management of the public service broadcasting. But the instruments are not enough. They has to be used. And so that, but of course, these instruments are preconditions. So the journalists and staff must have a chance to protect their values, their work, and so to improve the independence. So a vicious circle, which sometimes exists because the top management of the public service broadcaster will be appointed because of political reasons, and this top management in turn appoints his staff from the same considered by the same reasons, it can be probably opened up by professional education, and this is what I think the Cave Mohelo Academy and the school, namely the School of Journalism, is doing here. Thank you for your attention.